Oh, and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Oh boy, it's a cold and snowy day here on our farm. Amazing. It's way too early for that kind of thing to happen. But one of the cool parts about it is the ground temperature is cooling and cooling quickly. And when we talk about putting on fall nitrogen, that's one of the keys that we like to see that ground temperature getting cool. And here we go. We're going to talk about managing anhydrous ammonia today and using fall nitrogen on the farm. We're also going to be taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. And we'll also take your emails, radio@agphd.com.
Okay, first thing that I wanted to talk about today is when you have heard over the years, oh, you can put nitrogen on now, the soil temp is down to 50 degrees. Well, you also have to look at the calendar. And if the calendar says, yeah, I know the soil temp is 50 degrees, but it's just too early because our odds are against us when we look at, all right, hey, normally the weather would be a lot warmer. So I'm just saying it all depends on your area. For our area, now is about the time. When I look at the forecast for the next 2 weeks, it's supposed to be cold. So after 2 weeks, is the soil temp going to get above 50? No. Nope, it's not. So in other words, we're safe to start putting nitrogen on just about any time here. The next thing is I always encourage you, look at your soil tests. Look at the cation exchange capacity. See what your soil can really truly hold. So if you've got a really light, sandy soil, if you do any fall nitrogen, it should be at a pretty low rate. You got to be really careful. But on the flip side, if you've got good, heavy soil, you're in a dry area of the country, you're within a month of freeze up here in the fall, you like to plant just about right away after the spring thaw, I have no issue putting a whole bunch of nitrogen on in the fall. But you just have to be smart about it. It varies so much from area to area. Okay, next thing is with anhydrous ammonia, the number one thing always is safety, so be super careful. We, for many years, used a lot of anhydrous. We don't now just because the price has gone up so much and almost nobody around us carries it. But we would only let a couple of people on our farm deal with it because we were so worried about safety. So that's always got to be number one. And number two is when you put it in the ground, does it seal up properly? So the last 2 years, I was worried that it was too wet and we would smear the soil, we'd lose a whole bunch of the anhydrous, and that wasn't going to work. Well, this fall, I'm worried about the exact opposite, that it's so dry, we don't have enough soil moisture to retain that anhydrous right there. It could move up farther on us than it normally does and quicker. So that is a little concerning to me. I just really want you to take a look at what are your soil conditions. Can I seal that ground up with my anhydrous? And if you can, then I feel pretty good.
You know, when we think about that, Brian, I'm just thinking about getting tillage tools in the ground. Some of this dry, hard ground is pretty tough to do any kind of tillage or put anything in the ground. So that's going to be, and now granted, we're not going super deep with that either. But
well, that goes right hand in hand with can you seal up the ground. If it's so hard you can't even pull through, you got some issues.
It's not good. Let's speak about issues. Let's head to the phone lines here. We got David with us in Illinois right now. David, how are you doing?
Oh, it's a beautiful day in the springtime. If you're a penguin around here, it's cold.
Yes, it is. No doubt about that.
I'm the guy that talked about the 60-inch corn last week, a couple weeks ago, so that'll give you an idea of who I am. But last Friday, I was driving down the highway in a tractor with a bat wing on, and I was rear-ended, and I ended up completely upside down in the road ditch. Luckily, I had my seatbelt on, hanging upside down.
Wow.
Farmers really need to be looking at making sure you get your seatbelt on, because people are totally idiots out here on the highway anymore.
Yeah, that's good advice to have. You know, as we're heading down the roads, we're thinking about, too, all right, I'm driving 20 miles an hour here. I'm in a rural area. Should be in a good spot. I just got to be careful as I'm turning into fields. But, no, you're right. People can surprise you, and it's usually not good.
I walked away without a scratch, and people were saying that saw the pictures of it, and they said, and you mean you're still alive? I said, yep, thank you, Lord. I'll take that one. So.
Well, it's just one of your nine lives, David, so if I can joke about it at all. So that's one of your nine lives. You only got eight left, so better be really careful now.
Well, I had a real fun with that. My wife passed away 16 months ago from pancreatic cancer. I said, well, my wife told God, said, you know, I'm having way too much fun up here without him. Just leave him down there for a while yet. So.
Now, he's got more work to do down there. So what's stuff looking like out in your area now? How's harvest coming along?
Harvest is going good. Corn's down in the, where we're at, 13-14%. Beans are running in the 7-8% range now. You know, it's just dry. It's trying to sprinkle here right now. But, we're about a half done with beans and about a third done with corn. So, yeah, some guys are further along. Some guys aren't. You know, just depending on where they're at. So.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, thanks for the call, Dave. Thanks for the reminder. Safety on the roads is just super important. We talk about safety around the grain bins. We talk about safety around the equipment and everything else. But, boy, you get out on the roads, there's a lot of stuff that can happen. You really got to keep your eyes out.
That's right. You guys have fun.
You bet. Thanks a lot, David. Really appreciate it. You know, when you think about anhydrous ammonia too, Brian, that's one of the things that catches a lot of attention is just the safety factor of working around that as opposed to using liquid nitrogen or using a dry urea and that type of thing. And it's one of the reasons that people have gotten away from it. But there's a lot of misconceptions possibly about anhydrous, but there's a lot of true things that, you know, here there's some pros and cons of using different forms of nitrogen, but it certainly is one that when we're talking about fall nitrogen gets a lot of attention just because of the form that it's in and the lower potential for loss compared to some of the other types of nitrogen you may use. We're going to talk about anhydrous ammonia. We're also going to take your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Our email box is always open, radio@agphd.com. And you can find us on Twitter as well, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Asgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim, I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about managing anhydrous ammonia, and this is one that gets a lot of talk in the industry for sure. We've got John Nowatzky with us right now with North Dakota State University. I almost said South Dakota State University, John, but you might have just hung up on me right there. I'm not sure.
Well, I'd have stuck around, but I'd have mentioned it.
I got to be careful about that. All right, we're talking about anhydrous ammonia, and this is one of the fun things. As we talk to folks in different parts of the country, especially guys that are in the South, they're like, what are you guys talking about with this? But I said, you have to remember where we're at here in the Dakotas and the northern part of the United States and up into Canada. We get pretty cold, and that ground's going to be frozen for a long time. So if we put nitrogen out there, we got a pretty good chance it might stick around.
Right, exactly. And anhydrous is, you know, one of the major sources or uses of a way to put on nitrogen, at least in our area, in North Dakota, South Dakota.
Sure. Okay, so talk to us a little bit about the equipment involved and some of the things that guys should watch out for this year.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk, obviously, about anhydrous ammonia safety, and I've got about five different areas to talk about. And the first area is, you know, just why is anhydrous dangerous? And primarily, really for two reasons. One is it's under pressure. It's about 200 pounds pressure when it's in the nurse tank that the farmers use out in the field. And secondly, and probably more importantly, is that every molecule of anhydrous ammonia needs water. And that's what, obviously, that's what anhydrous means, is short of water. So if it gets on a person or a plant or anything, it's going to suck water out. So if it comes in contact with a person's skin, it's going to dehydrate that skin. And it's going to comes out of the tank at about minus 28 degrees Fahrenheit, so 30 below zero. And it quickly freezes the skin, as well as taking water, hydrogen molecules from your liquid in your body. So it's really dangerous. And the second thing is that if you inhale it, it's going to take that it's going to take that water out of your lungs, and it's really going to, it's extremely dangerous. If it's at a high concentration, it's, you know, you're not going to be able to breathe right away. If it's at a lower concentration, it's just going to be like a burning effect in your lungs and in your nasal passages. So the most important thing really is, if you smell it, get away from it. And if there is some kind of a break or a puncture or a leak, make sure if you can to be upwind from it, so it's blowing away from you.
Yeah. Just real common safety talks there, but it's things that in an emergency situation where you see, oh no, I got a break in the line, you just got to stop for a second and use your head and be prepared for these things. And I think, John, as guys are gearing up to start using some anhydrous this fall, it's just really important. I know, even if you've done it, a lot of farmers say, oh, I've done this for 20 years or 30 years. That may be true, but there's always a chance that something could go wrong, and you just have to be ready for those things up front.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing I think we all think initially when something like that happens is to try to stop it, try to save it. But in this case, the first thing we've got to think about is our own safety. And then the other, you know, as far as using this out in the field, it's important to obviously have water there. You know, you need to have several gallons, 5 gallons of water, and make sure that water is there all the time, because if you do get it on your skin, you want to just keep covering with water for minutes, for a long time. As long as you've got water there, just keep flushing it with water. As far as you know, what you wear, make sure you have equipment that, you know, clothes that protect you, have rubber goggles. I mean, have rubber gloves, and then have goggles that protect your eyes. And again, have water available. That's really important. Another thing, you know, that farmers are going to be doing is they're going to be picking up these tanks at a retail place and then bringing them home over the road. So there's some things that are important. One of them is and I'm talking about North Dakota, but I think it's similar in most of the northern plains states. You can only have two tanks behind one vehicle. You can only go 25 miles an hour, and the entire length of what you're the pulling vehicle, your pickup, or can be, and the tanks can be no longer than 75 feet. So those are laws in North Dakota. The other thing is, you can't pull it on the road except between sunrise and sunset. So even if there's lights, you can't, even if you have lights on the back of your equipment, you can't be pulling it after sunset. It has to be a slow-moving vehicle sign there, and you have to have chains that attach the tank trailer to the pulling vehicle if you're going over 15 miles an hour. So you have to have chains there. So those are some other things. You know, I guess the other thing to be concerned about is that when you connect and disconnect an anhydrous tank from your equipment, you're going to have to use a bleeder valve, and that bleeder valve is going to release some anhydrous. So make sure you're, again, standing upwind from it rather than downwind. Those are some of the things that I think it's important to remember.
Well, one thing, John, you're in North Dakota. Having a little bit of breeze out there is usually not a problem. You usually have some wind this time of year. So, yeah, you're right. If you just park things in the right direction. So, hey, if I need to be on this side, I just have to turn a little bit and I'll have a nice breeze going across. So that does actually right. help. That's kind of a nice thing.
And it's true today, too. Yeah. Only problem is today, there's some white stuff with the wind.
Hey, you know, Brian was talking about this earlier on the show, John, just about getting that ground to seal up. Is that something you're concerned about this year up in North Dakota? What are soil conditions like?
Well, the soil conditions are really good, actually, over most of North Dakota. We don't have excessive moisture. You know, our harvest has been done on time. And we don't have excessively dry. So I think this shouldn't be an issue. You know, you might have some issues if you wait a little bit longer. You know, we're predicted to have some single-digit temperatures at night this week. And so if that happens, we're going to start freezing the topsoil. So then it could be an issue. I don't think we're going to have an issue with temperature, you know, as far as being too warm. Because we don't see any temperatures above 50 degrees, and that's kind of where we're looking at for getting the anhydrous, letting the anhydrous get out of the soil after it's injected. So,
you know,
this would be a good fall for it.
One of the challenges in North Dakota, and for anybody listening that's not really familiar with the state, it's wildly different from the east side of North Dakota to the west side of North Dakota in terms of rainfall and soils and crops that are going to be in the rotation and so forth. Do you have different challenges on each side of the state as you're having this anhydrous talk? Do you have kind of the same talk you give the guys in the east as the guys in the west in the dry areas?
Well, that's an interesting question because I really have to stock in eastern North Dakota, at least in the Red River Valley, because there's very little anhydrous used here. Most of it is used outside the valley to the west, so the western two-thirds.
Sure.
No, you're still there.
Yes. Yep. Sorry, I lost you there for just a second. But, you know, you do have that flood risk in the Red River Valley. I assume that might be part of it, too.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, there's a number of reasons why anhydrous has been stopped using here in eastern North Dakota, and one of them actually has to do with meth, because if you go back over the last 10 years, farmers have had serious issues with people who are involved in selling meth, going out and cutting anhydrous tanks. And I've talked to farmers that said they just stopped because if the anhydrous tank was left out in the field overnight, then the next day there'd be, you know, a hose cut.
Yeah, so, that's for sure. And it's not just a North Dakota problem. We've heard that across the Midwest. No doubt about that. Well, hey, John, tell you what, we're up against time, but really appreciate having you on. I love the safety talk on anhydrous. We can never focus on that enough. John Nowatzky here with North Dakota State University. Thanks, John. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Talking about anhydrous ammonia on today's program and how you can best manage it on your farm. We'll be right back after this.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with ExtendFlex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about managing anhydrous ammonia on today's program. We got an expert on right now. It's Brooks. He's down in Missouri and been doing anhydrous for a while. Brooks, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm better now. You called me an expert in something, so that's
nice thing. Well, I'm more than 50 miles from your home, so that means you're an expert in everything.
That's exactly right.
Well, okay, let's talk anhydrous, because you do have a lot of experience with that, not only for your own operation, but for other farms as well. When does that start where you're at in Missouri?
We will start in another month or so. Actually, I saw what looked like anhydrous going on in a field. I don't know if it was or not, because I never saw any tanks, but it sure looked like a knife bar had gone through the soil. For the most part, it'll start here in another 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a month. We try to get it in as soon as the soil temperature is cold enough to hold it and before the ground freezes.
Do you have some differences as you travel through your area? I mean, are there some soils that you say, yeah, we're definitely going to wait longer on some lighter ground or anything? Or once that soil starts cooling down, everybody's ready to go?
It is. A lot of people, there are a couple of companies in our area that do most of the anhydrous, and they cover so many acres that they just have to start going when they can go and go until the ground freezes. And we try to keep it a little bit, like you said, if there's some sketchier soils, maybe we'll wait a minute, but otherwise, we kind of try to get it before the ground freezes as well.
So what is the soil condition like right now in your area? How are things playing out this fall?
They are very, very dry. They're calling for some rain this week, and we're close enough to being done with combine and that I'd almost rather it held off, but the ground really, really needs some moisture. I don't know that, it is so dry that it's going to be rock hard to try to apply any fertilizer this fall.
Now, we had a strange year where we had plenty of moisture early, and it looked like, oh, it's going to play out to be a pretty good year, and then it just absolutely quit once we got into July, and we are getting some moisture today, some of the first moisture that some folks have seen really since July. How about your area? Did you still end up with decent crops?
We did, actually. We actually got about 10 inches of rain in July, which is unheard of for this area, and so it really... It seemed like it really made the corn, and then it shut off. We didn't get a drop in August, and so the beans suffered, but our corn is a really good corn crop this year.
All right, so that means it probably used up all the N in the soil. I know there's some areas where guys were disappointed in yield, and they said, well, at least we got a little bit of N left in the soil. We don't have to put so much on next year. Probably means a full dose of N. I guess that's not bad for the anhydrous business.
Right. No. Yeah. We love it. You know, they use it all up and we get to sell them more of it. So, and we would ordinarily, we put on a rate on our ground anyway, we put on the same amount every year because we don't fertilize our beans. And so if we put on a little extra, hopefully there's a little, like you say, a little left over for the beans to grab some. Cause I don't feel like we have the best beans that we could have. Cause maybe we under fertilize in some areas.
Sure, sure. Anything else you're thinking about, Brooks, that growers should know about anhydrous going into this fall fertilizer season?
I mean, obviously, I say it every time. It's dangerous, and you need to be very careful. And even I get into a rut where I've been around it so often that I don't think about how dangerous it really is. And so I do something stupid, and it reminds me quickly, like, hey, this is dangerous stuff. You have to be careful. And so I would just say be careful and good luck. It's under, everyone's under time crunch. I understand that, but be careful and good luck.
You bet. Well, Brooks, thanks a lot. And good luck to you as you guys finish out harvest and get started on the fertilizer.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about managing anhydrous ammonia, and I think that's one point that Brooks brings up there, just that, hey, I've been doing this for a long time. It's easy sometimes to forget, hey, we are in a dangerous profession here, and this is a product that there's some risk around that you need to be smart. As long as you get the equipment all in great shape and everything else, it's going to be fine. It's not like you're in danger all the time when you're sitting in the cab, but you do have to pay attention, and when things need to get worked on, you got to take the extra precautions too. Let's head over to Indiana. We've got Gordon with us right now. Gordon, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. You guys out doing strip till yet, or are you still harvesting?
Actually, we just bought a used strip till unit in the last couple days, so we're just starting to think about this.
Okay, okay. So what are you thinking on the strip till?
So here's my question. I want to give you a hypothetical question that you guys have worked really hard to get your soil really in good balance. And if you had that field in what you think is an ideal balance, what would be your recipe that you would be applying in your strip till in front of corn? And now this is on, I'm going to say, commercial fertilizer, no compost, no manure, just like that type of a farm.
And you're saying if the soil is already balanced, what would
yes,
we put on?
If it's already balanced.
Yep. Got it. Okay. So, Gordon, what I would tell you is we're typically then looking at crop removal. So we're going to look at crop removal for N, P, and K. In terms of sulfur, boron, some of the micronutrients, then we might handle those just a little bit differently. Usually, to keep it simple with the strip till, we're just putting on the P and the K in the fall, and then we'll come back in the spring with the nitrogen, sulfur, and sometimes boron because all those are leachable. So, and they'll move around in the soil. Strip till and banding doesn't pay as much with those leachable things like nitrogen, sulfur, boron. So yeah, it's typically P and K, and we look at grain removal only, because as long as our soil is balanced and we're in pretty good shape in the soil overall, all we're really concerned about is we just say, hey, for example, we're going to pull off 225 bushel corn there next year. So we just, on our Ag PhD fertilizer removal app that is free for your smartphone, we'll just pull up, okay, what do we have here? We got corn. I'm literally doing this on my phone right now. 225 bushel corn takes 79 pounds of phosphate and 56 pounds of K2O potassium. So we say, all right, roughly, I'm just going to give you a rough idea here. We need about 150 pounds of MAP, and we need about 100 pounds of potash. So if it was dry, assuming I'm going dry, I throw in 150 pounds of MAP, I throw in 100 pounds of potash, so I got 250 pounds of total product we're throwing out in the fall, and I say, yep, I'm in pretty good shape. Then I come along in the spring with nitrogen, sulfur, boron, and if I need any of those tiny little micros, let's say I need just a little bit of copper or a little bit of zinc or something, I usually do that with the planter. So that's generally speaking how we would handle it.
Then the following year, if you're going back to soybeans, it's a broadcast spread in that situation?
Well, it all depends on what you want to do. I mean, we do strip till for our soybeans. We do some strip till for our corn. So, I mean, we've done it both ways. And when we do strip till for the beans, then I do the exact same thing I just told you for the corn. I just pull up, okay, I expect I'm going to get 70 bushel beans. What do those take out? And I just put out there what I think I'm going to need. Now, the other way to handle this, Gordon, you could say, you know what? I'm going to put out 2 years' worth of fertilizer. My goal is 225 on corn, and let's say that I'm going for 70 on beans. I just add the two together, and I throw it all out there right now. I mean, you can certainly do that if you want to. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to fertilize. All I know is this. If you are going to pull out off a certain amount of crop over the next couple of years, you at least have to put back, in terms of fertilizer, what the grain is going to remove. Otherwise, you're falling behind. Now, I'm not saying you can't do that. I mean, there are lots of people out there that do that, especially on rented ground, unfortunately. But if you want to stay even, that's what I'd be targeting.
Okay. All right. I just wanted in a hypothetical situation.
You bet.
You were kind of at. That's what I, all right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Thanks for the call, Gordon. Appreciate that. You know, we've been doing strip till on our farm for over 15 years now, and we've used a lot of different theories, tried a lot of things out, but this grain removal thing, if I've got my soil balanced, it's worked out really, really well. And we have found the nutrient removal charts to be fairly accurate, because if we don't put out as much as we're pulling off in terms of grain yield, you know what? We start falling behind in our soil tests. If we want to be in a little bit of a build program, we certainly can do that too. So we really like strip till because we get compaction reduced all the way down to the bottom of our strip till. We place fertilizer down deep. It's really a good way to go. Well, we'll continue talking anhydrous ammonia right after this.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
When it comes to competitive herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Weedmaster, Patriot, and Diablo for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva AgriScience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. we embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
The St. Hugh Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about managing anhydrous ammonia and taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. Ted, back to the phone lines. Got Dell in Michigan with us. Dell, thanks for calling.
Yes. Anhydrous ammonia, is a gas in the tank or is it a liquid? And when it comes out the nozzle down underground, is it a gas or a liquid? And then how does the plant finally use it? It can't suck up, well, it could through air, I guess, but how does the plant actually use it in the spring when it grows? And why does it act like almost like the plant's on steroids? I mean, it just grows. And explain that a little bit, please. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, thanks, Del. Appreciate that. Okay, so with anhydrous ammonia, a lot has to do with temperature. And yes, it absolutely is going to be... Okay, so let's put it this way. We're talking about a liquid product, but then we've got these vapors. So I don't know the whole chemistry lesson of it. In fact, I'll probably double check to make sure that I'm telling you the right thing before I say something. So I'll maybe catch that right after this next commercial break, and I'll go back and look at my notes. But I will say this: when he says it's like the plant is on steroids, the plant responds well to fertilizer. Now, you can't overdo it, but you got to have fertility out there. And I've seen it so many times in my life where somebody has a hose break and or something goes wrong and they put on two or three times as much fertilizer, and I can see it right to the line. And I go, hey, what happened here? Oh, yeah, that's where this happened, and we got extra fertility out there. Very often as farmers, we are looking at the economics of things, and that's how we have to farm. And so we say, well, you know, I'm going to try to get by with X for fertility. And that's fine in total. But what ends up happening is there are certain days where the plant needs more fertility, and we just simply don't have enough there. So by having a good dose of it out there and early on, that's a good thing. Here's the next thing. Where do you place anhydrous ammonia? You place it down 4 to 6 inches deep, usually, sometimes 8 inches. Okay, the reason why that's so great is because it's exactly where the vast majority of roots are. If you put fertilizer, let's think urea or liquid 28%, most of that is spread on top of the ground. Okay, now you're counting on rain to get it down into the ground, and sometimes it works great. And other times you don't get an adequate amount of rain. Sometimes you get too much rain. You just never know exactly where it's going to end up. Anhydrous ammonia, what it ends up doing is converts to ammonium shortly after it's put into the ground, usually in just a few days, and then it locks onto the soil for a while. Eventually, yes, ammonium can turn into nitrate, but when it's ammonium, that's a good thing because that's positively charged. Your soil is negatively charged. So you've got nitrogen hanging out right in the root zone, right where your crop actually needs it. And also, by the way, it's right where there is usually good soil moisture. So you've got all that that's happening, and that's part of the reason why I know, like for us, we've always really liked anhydrous ammonia. If it's dollar for dollar the same, if you took the safety factor out, I'd take anhydrous ammonia all day long. My concern with anhydrous, my number one concern, my number two concern, my number three concern is all safety, safety, safety. Okay, I worry so much about that. And if you have an inexperienced operator, that's where I get the most nervous, obviously. We got to make sure that we're super safe. So anyway, I'll come back to the chemistry of it probably right after our next break. Let's jump back to the phone lines right now. We've got Nathan calling in from down in Missouri. Nathan, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. So I hear you got a question for us on killing microbes in the soil.
Yeah, I don't know all the words for this stuff, but the last couple of years we've done dry just due to the weather and compaction and stuff and just being able to get the anhydrous on in the fall.
Sure.
And we've been having good results. Obviously, the cost is substantially more than anhydrous.
Yep.
My question is there any truth to people saying, I use the word organisms, microbes, whatever's living in the soil,
that
kills that stuff versus, say, using dry?
Sure. Okay. So with almost anything we do out in the field, we're going to kill some microbes. That's just the way it is. It's a question of how many you're going to kill, how big an area you're going to kill, and for how long you're going to kill them. With anhydrous ammonia, what you're going to find is absolutely right where that knife point is and right where you're injecting the anhydrous. I mean, it's harsh stuff. Well, I'm sure you know, just like all of us who have ever put it on, it's really harsh stuff. So we got to be super, super careful with that. But I'll go back 20 years ago. We used to do a lot of stuff with Francis Childs. He was the first guy in the United States raising over 400 bushel corn. And by the way, Darren was on his farm and absolutely verified, no, it's real. It's 400 plus. And Francis used anhydrous all the time. Okay, and the way I look at it is, look, if a guy raising 400 plus bushel corn can use anhydrous all the time, that was his main nitrogen source, I'm not too worried about it in my 200, 250 bushel corn. I think it's going to be fine. So the soil is big. The soil is vast. We're only pulling shanks every 30 inches once, basically every other year. So, yep, we're going to kill some soil microbes in a small area in that. But the soil is going to recover fairly quickly if we're doing a lot of the other things right. So, nope, I wouldn't get all that worried about it. But yes, it is very true that you're going to kill a few more microbes with the anhydrous than you are with the dry. I just don't think it's anything to get too worried about.
Okay, well, that's what, because big picture, you can save a lot of money and be a little more comfortable knowing it's there. So.
Yep, I agree with you 100%. So, no, if I can save a bunch of money and I place it right, everything goes right, and I'm safe, I'll take anhydrous, absolutely no worries.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, yep, thank you.
All right, can we dive into the Ag PhD mailbag, Janelle?
It's the mailbag!
Got an email that just came in from John over in Minnesota, and he said, got a neighbor that applied anhydrous 3 days ago. Then he harvested sugar beets and drove over his field headlands. The neighbor then worked in the headlands, and he's wondered if he had any loss of anhydrous due to it not being 5 days since the anhydrous was applied. The soil conditions were dry up until a day or two. Application of ground working happened before we got any moisture. He was told he should wait 5 days before working ground after applying anhydrous.
Well, it's just like how we say, oh, we love to plant our corn after the soil temp is 50 degrees and going up. We love to put our nitrogen on when the soil temp is 50 degrees and going down. These are just kind of general rules. There's nothing saying I've lost all my nitrogen because I did tillage in less than 5 days afterwards. How much did you lose? I don't know exactly. Am I that worried about it? No, I'm not. It's not that big a deal. So could you have lost a little bit? Sure, but you probably were going to lose a little bit anyway because the soil was so dry. So would I be that worried? No, I would not. But I mean, just because of your soil conditions this fall in general, I don't feel like anhydrous is going to seal up very well. So if it's me, how I'm going to overcome that is I'm going to apply it extra deep. Instead of going 4 or 6 inches, I might shoot for 8 or I'll even say it, 10 inches deep. If there's some way you could get it extra deep, I'd feel more comfortable because that soil is so dry. And you just have a better chance before those vapors get out of the soil that they're going to attach themselves to soil and you're not going to lose the nitrogen.
Yeah, dry conditions are just a little scary, but so are excessively wet conditions. I loved when we were talking to to John Nowatzki up at North Dakota State about the Red River Valley, that a lot of times end up with wet conditions there and heavy soils. And that doesn't work very good either for sealing up that trench. And I still think back, Brian, I remember we were somewhere down south, somewhere around Sioux City, and we were riding back home with our dad, and he we're driving along the interstate, and we're just watching somebody putting on anhydrous. And he said, look at the puffs of smoke behind that anhydrous machine. It's not getting in the ground. He's not getting that ground to seal up. And the guy just kept going, and he's like, oh, man, I wish he'd get out and check that right now. But he didn't. So it's one of those things. You just got to make sure if you're going to use it, use it wisely and make sure you get it in the ground so it actually is going to help and benefit your crop. Got a number of questions here for the Ag PhD mailbag. We'll dive into those coming up next.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, earlier, Del, or just in our last segment, Del had asked about anhydrous, and I just, okay, let's put it this way. I was no chemistry major in college or anything, so I just had to think a little bit on the anhydrous. It's a compressed gas that becomes liquid in the soil. It's going to meet up with water, and then it's going to convert over. And like I was saying, it's going to go to, so we're talking ammonia, and then it's going to convert over to ammonium fairly quickly, like I was saying, usually within a couple of days. Darren, do you have any better description of that? What else, how else can I, should I describe?
No, I don't. So that the big thing, and I know that we were talking about this earlier on the show, and you may just go back and listen to the show again where John Nowatzki was talking from North Dakota State, and it's just that it's compressed and it's 200 pounds of pressure. It's a lot, and that is part of the danger to this. And then, of course, it's something that needs water, and so it's going to attract to whatever water is available, whether that's in your skin or something in the soil. So like our last caller was just asking about safety to microbes. Yeah, microbes contain water, and it's going to suck the moisture right out of them. So if you're right by where that knife is injecting anhydrous, absolutely it's going to kill some microbes right there. Now, is it going to kill all the microbes in all the soil? No. But it's certainly going to have a big impact right around where that anhydrous goes in, just like it is if you get around it. That could be trouble, so be careful. All right, a question came in from Levi in North Central Iowa. He said, we tried a soil warrior on 25% of our farmer. Seed bed was close to perfect. Really impressed with the concentration of fertilizer and producing such a bountiful ear for the good ears. He said, the downside was our soil temperatures were much colder than our conventional tilled ground this spring, and that's what we had on the rest of the farm. This did affect our emergence, gave us variability in ear size, and impacted our yield. You have colder soils than we do. How do you guys counteract the emergence issue so you can match the emergence to conventionally tilled soils?
Okay. So first of all, when you're going to compare conventional till to strip till, I agree with that. The conventional till is going to be a little bit warmer. The strip till, though, is going to be much warmer. Our readings most of the time over the years have been 7 degrees warmer in that zone where it is tilled versus the no-till that is right next to it. So we were no-till on our farm, roughly half our farm. I'm going to call it 25, 27 years ago we started doing that, and we did it for about 10 years. And our biggest challenge, number one, was soil too cold. Number two was nutrient stratification. By placing nutrients deeper with the strip till, we solved the nutrient stratification thing, and obviously the tillage in the strip helped with our issue being too cold. But nevertheless, even with strip till, we are going to plant in soils that sometimes are 40 degrees. And you might go, whoa, I thought you're supposed to wait till 50 or 55 degree soil temps. Well, that's great if you got 10 acres to plant. But when you got, we farm 3,200 acres. And here's the other thing, we're always cold and wet, and we lose many of the days, most springs, to too wet. So, I mean, it starts raining, whatever, we can't get out there, and we might lose a week. We might lose 2 weeks at a time. And so we have to roll early. I don't care that much about cold soil temps. Here's how we overcome it. Number one, you got to have great seed treatment. So on the corn we plant, we have 35 treatments on there. We have extra fungicide. We have a whole bunch of biologicals, or we'd call them naturals. So you do that. Next thing, you put insecticide in furrow. You use a little bit of fungicide in furrow, and also a little bit, and I'm not saying much, but a little bit of fertilizer in furrow that's got to be low salt. So you do all those things. You got extra seed treatment, you got insecticide, fungicide, and a little bit of fertilizer. You pop that stuff out of the ground, and you do it fairly quickly. So we're able to dramatically reduce the amount of time it takes to get that seed out of the ground. We're able to increase the early vigor on that plant, and so now I don't have to wait for the soil temp to be 50 or 55 degrees. And here's the thing, even if I did, it's very common for us where the soil temp hits 50 or 55 degrees, and within 3 days, it's down to 35, 39, 40, 42 degrees. So it's going to drop back down. There's just no way around that. Unless you want to plant in June around here, you're going to have cold soil temps. So we have to do these other things in order to compensate for that, and it works quite well.
All right, thanks for the question. Got a couple of soil samples here. This is from Evan in Pennsylvania. And he said, looking for some direction on trying to fix some soil problems here. Unfortunately, I don't have complete tests. This is from my girlfriend's family's farm, and I've tried to convince them now that they need to take more tests at GPS points so we can long-term follow them, and they need to include micros. So hopefully we'll have that for the future, but this is what I've got to start with anyway. Drainage doesn't appear to be a problem. We got rolling hills. We've got a couple of layer houses nearby that spread litter on this ground year after year for quite a while, but it hasn't been spread in over 10 years. It's continuous corn, 150, 160 bushel yields, but there are guys around us getting 200. So I didn't go to school for agronomy, but I enjoy listening to your show, and I'm hoping you can help.
Here's the problem. It's light ground. So without irrigation, you're really super dependent on Mother Nature. There are CECs in here as low as 5. We'd call that real sandy soil. Your organic matter, 2. So when you've got that light of soil, we're dealing with a lot of sand, we got 2% organic matter, you need rain, and you need rain just about every week. So if you can get that, great. Now, quite often here on the show, we talk about how phosphorus doesn't move in soil. I can really see that. It really shows up here. His phosphorus levels are off the charts high. That's great, but his potassium levels are not. Now, his base saturation K doesn't look horrible. It's 2, 3% for the most part, a little bit of 4. But in light soil, as I'm sure you're well aware by now if you listen to the show often, 2 or 3 or 4% isn't going to cut it in light soil. He's got as low as 76 parts per million. I think that's parts per million. Doesn't say. Got to be parts per million. Anyway, 76 parts per million, that's not going to cut it for 200 bushel corn. You're not even close. So this is a good example of, yes, we need to look at base saturation K, but we also have to look at how many actual pounds of potassium do you have in your soil. Is it enough to feed that crop? No. Potassium does move somewhat in light soils, especially in areas where you have a lot of rainfall. So my assumption here, when there hasn't been this manure or chicken litter put on for 10 years, phosphorus isn't going anywhere. Okay, even in that light soil, it sticks around till eventually you use it, but you've been losing the potassium over time. So you absolutely need potassium, and phosphorus you're in great shape on. Now, when we have high phosphorus levels, here are two nutrients that unfortunately you don't have in your soil test that you absolutely need, copper and zinc. What we found on our farm is if we have phosphorus too high in relation to zinc, then we lose out on yield. Same thing when phosphorus is too high in relation to copper. I could also flip that around and say if my copper levels are too high compared to phosphorus, or if my zinc levels are too high compared to phosphorus, now I get a problem. So I don't know on your zinc and your copper how you're doing because I don't have a test. I also need to see sulfur. That is a tremendously important nutrient. We were just talking about that on the show. I think it was yesterday. I got to see where your sulfur is at. And in your light soil, my assumption is you don't have much. So I'd be getting some boron and sulfur out there along with nitrogen every single year. I mean, that you have a crop like corn, for example, that needs the nitrogen. But you got to get those leachable nutrients out there every year in the light soil. And then for nutrients that don't move, like copper and zinc and to some degree iron and manganese, I want to see what my levels are to see if I need to add any, because those very well could be problems in your farm, especially as high as that phosphorus is.
Thanks for the questions. And yeah, as you get additional tests, we'd love to take a look at those too. Thanks a lot. This one comes from Nat in Russia and Ukraine. He said, the leading sunflower producers here are using a lot of pre-emerge herbicides that you don't even talk about, like S-metolachlor, Dual, Acetachlor, Outlook, Valor, a lot of different products here. Wondering, aren't those labeled in the United States? And then also, why do you say pendimethalin is only for no-till? Well, thanks for the questions, Nat. First of all, we don't say pendimethalin's only for no-till. In fact, we utilize pendimethalin on our farm over the years, and we have incorporated that. So incorporation's fine. You just want to get too deep.
Well,
and
yeah,
other products you mentioned, for the most part, aren't labeled.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When pendimethalin costs 2.5 times what trifluralin does, why would you use pendimethalin when you can save a whole bunch of money? So, yes, it's labeled, but economically, there's no point in using it in conventional till. You might as well use trifluralin and save the money.
Hey, thanks for the questions, Nat, and good luck to you there. Yeah, there's certainly differences as you travel country to country in terms of which products are labeled for which crops, and like Brian mentioned too, the economics of using each one. Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.